Good morning, and welcome to the third quarter 2022 presentation for Elopak. My name is Mirza Koristovic, and I'm Head of Investor Relations. Today's presentation will be held by the CEO, Thomas Körmendi, and the CFO, Bent Axelsen. The presentation will last for approximately 25 minutes and is available on live webcast on our webpage under the IR section. We will have a Q&A session after the presentation, where there will be a possibility to ask questions for the audience here in Oslo and also for the webcast audience through the chat function. With that, I leave the word to the CEO, Thomas Körmendi.
Thank you, Mirza, and good morning to everyone. Welcome to all of you here in Oslo and everywhere where you may be following. We're very happy to present this quarter to you. It's a strong quarter, and let me just start off by giving you a few words about who we are as Elopak. For those of you who haven't seen us before, we are in fact the number one player in fresh liquid carton packaging around the world. We are currently selling around 14 billion packs spread around mainly what we would say is Europe and Americas, and servicing right now somewhere around 70+ markets in these geographies. Most of our sales relates to the European region, consisting of Europe and MENA, and the remainder is in Americas, which is consisting of Canada, U.S., and Central America. As you can see, we also provide our fresh portfolio as well as an aseptic portfolio that I'll be describing very shortly. Over the years, we've seen solid growth, and we're happy to note that this is one more quarter of very solid growth figures. Now, what is important for us and drives everything we do is actually our vision and mission, and our mission statement is very much related to both people and nature. Sustainability is a fundamental part of what we do, and specifically, we are totally and completely committed to fiber packaging, fiber solutions. We do this in a number of different ways, continuously developing these fiber solutions and expanding the range of content that we can use these solutions for. Overall, leaving the world unharmed is something that drives our innovation, our operations, and our activities around the world. Before we start on the quarter and the business this year, let me just start with a client kind of definition and specification here. The figures you're about to see have been deconsolidated with Russia that we have been exiting, and we've been informing the stock market that we did this earlier this year. We have deconsolidated the figures in 2021 as well in order to make a proper comparison when it comes to P&L, but not on the balance sheet, so you will see when Bent will address the balance sheet that these still consist of Russia in 2021. How did we do? First of all, you can say we saw another quarter of very good growth and margin recovery, and this is what we have been seeing this quarter, is that not only did we see the growth in our areas around the world, but we also saw that now the margin recovery that we have explained earlier is happening, despite the continued very high cost level we're seeing. We see a 26% year-on-year growth, out of which 15% is organic. We see an EBITDA level of just shy of 12%, and we see a significant amount of that organic growth being delivered in EMEA region in Europe, with price increases consisting of roughly half of the organic growth that was delivered in the period. And what we also see, and I'll come back to that, Americas providing yet another very, very strong quarter. And overall, you can see that the business we're in, the food packaging business, is really resilient, has proven to be resilient in the types of products we are packing, typically liquid dairy products, juices, and related products. So on the revenue side, it's interesting to note that we see a very strong growth of 56 million or 26%. Now, if you take part of that is clearly translation effect from the US dollar. So if we look at the organic part here, we are still seeing 33 million growth in the quarter, generated partly by 18 million in price increases in Europe, partly by the volume increase and the volume growth we've had in Americas. And if you then say, if we disregard, if you can disregard the pricing impact, then the organic growth we are seeing is above actually the guideline we did for the midterm targets, which you remember was around 3%. We are looking at a growth level above that, even without the impact of the pricing. On an EBITDA level, we are seeing a margin level that is below what we had third quarter last year, but is recovering nicely, and we actually see an EBITDA level that in absolute terms is above what we have last year. So 7% growth in EBITDA level. Input costs remain high, even though they have come down from the very peak, they are still at a very, very high level. Meanwhile, we have other input costs which have continued to grow excessively, I would say. One of these is energy. And despite that, we've managed to actually recover margin nicely, thanks to very much the price increases that we've been obliged to execute during this year. And as we've said before, in U.S., in the Americas market, we have a special setup thanks to the pass-through contracts that are available there. So let's focus then on EMEA. Now, EMEA is really an area that has been dominated by the pricing initiatives that have been made throughout the quarter. And as you can see, we have an impact of the acquired businesses, which in this case relates to the Naturepak business in MENA region of around 12 million, which leaves us an organic growth around 13% or 22 million, out of which 18 relates to the pricing effect done during this period. What is also noteworthy is that during this period in Europe, milk consumption has been challenged, and we've actually seen declines in some parts in milk consumption. But that consumption has been mitigated in our case by higher growth in South, essentially both in aseptic milk and also in juice-related products. Additionally, we've seen here in Europe a very solid growth on our roll-fed portfolio with around 6%, all generating a strong organic growth quarter for us in Europe. All in all, in a profitability that is satisfactory given the circumstances that we're in. Now, Americas is a, and I've been reporting this now a few times, yet another very strong quarter for Americas. We have a very clear strategy in Americas related to growth, related to the way we build our business in terms of product offering and services that we're offering, and clearly, It's not often you have the chance to report 50% growth in a quarter in any specific region, but that's what we do. So on an organic level, we are talking about 26%, which is also a fantastic development, both on the revenue side and the EBITDA side. Now, the revenue growth here clearly also in Americas relates partly to pricing, and again, you have pass-through contracts in Americas, but also relates to broader portfolio, executing on the strategy when it comes to juices, when it comes to our filling machine portfolio. And we're very happy to note and report that our product offering on the filling machine side has been received exceedingly well from the market, and we are contracting more and more filling machines, leading us to a, let's say, a very significant share of the new filling machines contracted during this period in Americas. All of that, I can say, actually, for those of you who followed us during the IPO, is well ahead of the ambition that we presented at that time. And talking of IPO, this is the slide I've been using, and some of you who've been following us will have seen this a few times. This actually illustrates the strategy that we're executing and the areas that is currently delivering the results and growth that we're seeing. Now, I just described Americas and the results that we've been seeing for a number of quarters now. Essentially, this is all about ensuring that we have the adequate and the fit-for-purpose portfolio to address both milk and juice, which we're doing now, deliver the filling machines that we're doing, and the services and caps and closures around this. The aseptic roadmap is very much related to the EMP, the Elopak machine platform, which we now have renamed Pure-Fill, and the rollout of that. I'm coming back to that specific point in just a second. And of course, our MENA strategy relates to driving the business, growing the business in the Middle East, North Africa, through our acquisitions now in Casablanca and Dammam, but also extending that into India with the plant we have now outside of Delhi, together with GLS as our partner. And finally, the plastic to carton is essentially delivering on the mega trend that we all see of reducing the plastic in our daily life, and which is exactly in par with our vision and strategy, delivering solutions that can make that happen, both in our current categories as well as in other categories. And finally, the last part really relates primarily in this year to the work we've done around adjusting pricing, ensuring that we have a see, we're ensuring that we can run our plants in an optimal way and drive the efficiency through our systems. So that are the five pillars that constitute our growth plan here. So let me give you some examples how that actually pans out in this quarter. And I'm happy to say, and we've talked about the EMP for a number of times, and you've been asking me, when is this happening? Well, it is happening now. We have now placed our first EMP Pure-Fill machine with maybe one of the best-known iced teas in Europe, Fana. Fana has the 2-liter iconic carton, which is sold across almost the world. Many, many countries around the world, you will find it. And we have now installed with them the first Pure-Fill line, the first 2-liter fully aseptic line anywhere in the world in a Gable-top system. The other one, the second one, really is about aseptic strategy, but also about reducing plastics. This is the story around how we, on one hand, can drive strategy to deliver on our vision and mission to expand fiber and yet also drive for our customers cost savings, better TCOs, more attractive products. This is the case of Ferraco. Ferraco is a very well-known quality supplier of UHT milk in Spain. And they have then started as this first milk, UHT milk company to supply customers with gable top packaging without closures, without the use of plastic closures, which on one hand saves plastic and additionally, of course, saves a lot of cost by not adding these closures to the packs. These packs are now being offered. In this case, this particular example is in Africa, but it's an example of how you can meet both sustainability and cost targets in one attempt. And the final example on this page is really because, as we have been explaining or describing a few times, we are looking at the plant-based area as a huge area for growth. In this particular case, we're very happy that Tesco in the U.K. chose our Pure-Pak system to expand in their wide portfolio of vegan products, which is sold under the name of Wicked. It's about 70 different products. And out of this as well, you have now a lineup of barista plant-based products. And the reason this is interesting is, of course, beyond the fact that we're very happy that they chose our product, is also that plant-based is a strong growth category, and it's also a category that is essentially only in carton. And we are now seeing more and more companies and businesses that are looking at our Pure-Pak systems to drive that business in a way for them. So with this, I think I will hand over to you, Bent, and ask you to go through the financials.
Thank you, Thomas. So yes, my name is Bent Axelsen. I'm the CFO of Elopak. Consequently, I will take you through the financials. So we are reporting, as Thomas mentioned, an adjusted EBITDA for continuing operations of 32 million euro, which is then 2 million higher than last year. So let me remind you that the P&L items are excluding the Russia business. So let's then start with the segments here. I think the underlying achievement that we are the most, say, happy about is our ability to increase the prices in EMEA. We said in the Q2 earnings call that our ambition was to increase the prices broadly in line with the raw material cost, and we are really happy to kind of confirm that now the numbers are showing our ability to do so. So if we go to Americas, that's where we have the biggest financial improvement, where we go from 10 million to 14 million euro. This is very much driven by the growth that Thomas explained. In addition, we are also very pleased by the results of our JV businesses in Americas, where we have improved the profit by almost 1 million euro compared to the same quarter last year. That is more than a doubling. And what we are seeing in the joint ventures is a recovery from COVID, with the school milk program coming back on stream. At the same time, with active price management, we are also managing and improving the margin in those joint ventures. We have a positive currency effect on the EBITDA level of 2 million euro in the Americas business as well, for the same reason that Thomas explained. And finally, we have the protection from the commercial pass-through clauses in Americas. So this is the segment split. Let me now take you through the bridge taking us from 30 million euro last year to 32 million this year. So what we are looking at here is finally we are seeing a net revenue mix that is higher than the raw material impact. So let me break it down. 24 million is the price and volume impact in Europe. It is the gross margin impact in Americas. It is the gross margin from the newly acquired business in MENA and India, totaling 24 million euro. And remember then, out of these 24, 18 million euro is the price increases linked to the EMEA segment. So that's the net revenue part. Now, the next component is the raw material impact in EMEA only. 17 million euro, and that is one of the highest raw material deviations we've seen in a quarter. So what we have observed, and we talked about that in the second quarter, even if we've seen a softening of PE prices, all the prices throughout the quarter, given the inventory turnover effect, we are seeing a higher realized cost of PE and alu. Because as you remember, there is a time lag between observed market prices until it hits the cost of goods sold in Elopak. Another element is the energy prices, where we have seen a significant increase in energy prices, compared to both compared to last year, obviously, but also compared to the second quarter. I think the energy prices is the one also to look out for, when we are, say, looking at the future, is to say the most, say, that factor that has the highest level of uncertainty among our input factors. If we move on to the operations, we see a negative deviation of 6 million. That is related to a number of reasons. One, we have a much higher activity level this year with traveling and activity in general. I think this quarter last year was still very much, say, dampened by the pandemic. Two, we have strengthened the organization, central function after being a listed company. We are including all the operations costs from the newly acquired businesses in MENA and India. And also remember, India, we consolidate 100%. We also have some operational challenges following kind of getting out of Russia. We have some complexity costs related to finding our way, dealing with production and allocation after the closing of the Russia operations, and also, say, some sick leave related to COVID. And finally, we are also seeing the inflation starting to attack the fixed cost base as well. And then finally, we have the 2 million euro in currency translation effect, which is basically taking the EBITDA from the Americas operation and that, say, translation effect from dollar to euro. Now we have a new slide compared to the earlier quarter, which is the cash flow. So let me take you through that. First, we have a well, first, I need to say that the cash flow statement does include Russia. So here we do not distinguish between continuing operations and discontinued operations. So here it's all in. So let's start with the cash flow from operations, which is 25 million euro. We start with 14 million euro profit before tax and interest paid, a rather low level impacted by the impairment in both Russia and Ukraine. Then we add back 57 million euro, which is the depreciation of the existing assets, the depreciation of the newly acquired assets, the impairments that I just talked about. And then we move on to operating capital that has increased by 46 million euro. What is important to remember is that this is very much a result of higher prices and inflation. It is really a natural mathematical consequence. On a run rate basis, our revenues are increased around 150 million euro if you do an annualization of the year-to-date numbers. That revenue growth needs to be financed by operating capital. So this is explaining the majority of these 46. Then we have more operating capital also from having a larger footprint in both MENA and India. The operating capital turnover, if you're measuring the revenues versus operating capital, the turnover is actually better compared to same quarter last year. Where we do, say, have a underlying higher operating capital level would be for the inventory of filling machine. And that is explained by the fact that we need to be prepared to install all these machines that Thomas talked about next year. So we need to have that or those on stock. And we do also have some delays in commissioning of filling machines in Europe because of supply chain challenges, both for the customers, partly also for us. That leaves us to the cash flow from investments, which is minus 122 million euro. This is one, the acquisition of NaturePak and India joint ventures of 97 million euro. Then we have investments in maintenance in our plants. We have capex related to the filling machines that we are leasing out, totaling to 29 million euro, which is a normal level, I would say. The next part, cash flow from financing, is 92 million. This is basically our dividend payment of 20 million that we did the beginning of the year, and basically it's a proceeds from loans in order to balancing the cash back to 25 million euro. That takes me to the financial position, where we report a leverage ratio of 3.3. I would like to also to remind here that Russia is excluded for the last four quarters. So from Q4 onwards, Russia is out. So we report a leverage ratio of 3.3 in the third quarter. This is actually an improvement versus second quarter. The main driver for that is an improved operating capital position compared to the second quarter, and also we have also the improved EBITDA that also improves the situation. For a very sharp eye, you probably ask, say, why do you show 3.6 in second quarter? Well, in the second quarter, we reported 3.4, including Russia. If you restate without Russia, the leverage ratio is 3.6. So it's simply a result of the restatement related to Russia. Let's then talk about what will happen in Q4. So as we have informed in notes in earlier quarterly presentation or quarterly reports and also in the prospectus, we do have a project that we call High Bay Warehouse, which is a super exciting project. This is a lease arrangement that will give us an increased lease liability in Q4. This is around 22 million euro, and will hit the net debt in fourth quarter. So it's basically, say, an IFRS 16 impact adding that we have to add on top of the net debt. Consequently, we also have in our revolving credit facility, we have amended the covenants to make room for that. And if you need more information about what that covenant the paths look like, please look into the stock notice from June 22nd. Now to the outlook. So in the second quarter, we said that we expected our revenues to be around 1 billion euro. So now we are saying that we expect the revenues to be slightly above 1 billion euro for the continued operations. So that those revenues estimates still without Russia. On the margin side, there is still uncertainty around the input cost and particularly on energy. So we expect that the Q4 adjusted EBITDA margin will be in line with the Q3 margins. And finally, as any company, we in a way are concerned about the geopolitical and macroeconomic uncertainties. That is a concern. We are in a resilient business, and Thomas will talk more about that in the summary. So back to you, Thomas.
Thank you, Bent. Just then summing up on this quarter, it's clear that, as Bent said, we are living very, very extraordinary times. And there's no question, I think we all understand that it is a challenging environment to operate in. But we're happy to say that we're delivering growth, we're delivering profitability and continuing to develop the company along with the plans that we have outlined previously. In these challenging and extraordinary times we live, we also know that we are in a resilient business. We are proven to be in a resilient business in the kind of products that we're packing, in the kind of business that we're working with. And that, of course, gives us confidence to continue to push, even during this period, in that direction. And it's very clear to see that the strategy implementation, we can note, is on track. America is delivering exceedingly well, again for a quarter. Although our aseptic rollout was somewhat delayed with the availability of components and parts, etc., that has been an issue in the world, we are now happy to say that our first EMP PureFill 2-liter machine is in the market. It's with a customer, and it's with a very, very iconic, noted iced tea supplier in Europe. Our business in North Africa, in the MENA, is delivering according to our sales plans. We are selling and delivering across all of these markets as we had intended when we set up the business case. On the other hand, India is doing a lot better, frankly, than what we thought when we started off. And after a very, very short time in the market, we are exceedingly optimistic around where that business can go in the coming period. And then finally, of course, we were obliged to increase prices as the very, very high raw materials hit our industry as well. And we can only note that we are happy about the successful implementation so far on how that's panned out. So all in all, we are looking at a quarter that we are very pleased with, and I am then looking forward to your questions, both here in the room and elsewhere.
Thank you, Thomas and Ben, for your presentation. And we will now go into the Q&A session. We'll begin with the audience here in Oslo before we take on the ones from webcast. And for the journalists present here today, we will set aside time immediately after the Q&A session. So let's begin. I would like to kindly ask you to please state your name and the company you're representing, and please use the microphone. All right, I can begin with a question from the audience, from the webcast. Robin Santavirta in Carnegie, do you plan further sales price increases in EMEA? If so, when and in what amount?
Right. So, what I can say is, we are of course continuing to live with very, very high very high cost input. This is true for the PE, for the alufoils, but it's also true for the general inflation that we're all experiencing, which is impacting our fixed cost, as Bent said as well. So the answer, short answer is yes. The other short answer is I'm not going to say how much it is. And the third answer is that it will be in the new year.
Thank you. Another question from Robin. How will your input costs develop in Q4? Will the declined spot prices of PE and aluminum be visible already in Q4?
Yeah, so I think that we will say benefit from the softening of PE and alu for regarding our cost of goods sold. But the energy cost will we expect to stay at a high level and is an X factor. So that is also say why we are say careful with the margin guidance and say that the margin will be approximately at the same level. So I think you just can assume that, say, the raw material cost in general will be, say, similar to Q3, because the energy and the PE alu, they will, to some extent, say, working against each other.
Thanks, Bent. And one more question from the audience on the webcast from Thomas Angerman. Please, can you give more details about the debt maturity profile, interest rates profile, and the development of interest costs going forward?
So I think we can come back to you on the kind of the whole, say, structure on our RCF. So we will, say, follow that up offline on because there is a ladder. So what we said in the stock notice from June is that we have extended our, say, facility until May 2024, and that is the status at the moment. And we will come back to you on how kind of that profile looks like one-to-one.
Good. And from Mumal Irfan in Goldman Sachs, thanks for the presentation. She has a question regarding growth from new fillers, given the high interest rates and Europe going into the recession. Do you expect customers to be cautious regarding new filler investments?
Yeah, I think that is actually honestly a bit too early to say from our perspective. We are seeing a solid backlog on fillers. What we have experienced, and I think I mentioned that during the last quarter, is that we have some delays in installation driven mainly because our customers and their facilities did not manage to get ready in time. Deliveries and other processing and other elements they need were delayed. So with that delay, our backlog is solid on the filler side. When it comes to fillers beyond that horizon, it's too early to say whether we will see any softening in the figures. So far in Americas as well, we continue to see very strong demand on our the equipment that we are providing in Americas.
And you could say, just to add to that, I think, you know, we have signed 13 machines in America. Those will be commissioned next year, so that is done business. Those are sales. In Europe, there's a mix between lease and sales. So I think that is also important to remember for, say, the aseptic strategy, delivering on aseptic growth strategy. It's quite normal in this industry that we lease the machines, which means that, say, the cash in the capex will be on for Elopak in order to kind of drive that growth. And when it comes to the fresh replacement program, if you need a machine, you need a new machine, and it's really out also a necessity as well.
Thank you. And from Niklas Gehin in DNB, what energy cost increase quarter over quarter do you assume when saying that you expect flat EBITDA margin into Q4?
I don't have any specifics on kind of energy and PE alu, say, separately. But I think what I can say is that kind of whatever we are seeing in softening on alu and PE is kind of more or less neutralized by the way we look at the energy market. I think the challenging thing with energy is that while we have an inventory turnover for PE Alu, it's easier for us to kind of project the cost base for energy. It's so volatile, and it hits the P&L immediately. So it's a very difficult driver to predict. But I would say the short answer is that whatever we gain from PE Alu will probably be eaten up by energy.
Thanks. And another one from DNB is that you mention operational challenges affecting operational costs in Q3. Do you expect any of these to also have an effect in Q4?
I think much of these complexity issues related to, managing the closure of Russia is things that we are stabilizing, and I think we will manage to improve on that in the fourth quarter. I think as many companies report, there's been some sick leave related to COVID, and that maybe is a little bit difficult to predict, the effect of sick leave, because if we have more, cases in the fourth quarter, that could be a factor that could drive, the cost somewhat, but it's not a big number.
Thanks. And from Mr. Santavirta in Carnegie, have you seen any changes to the demand driven by the weakened macroeconomic environment in any of your segments?
What we are seeing is maybe more of the obvious. What we're seeing is that some of the branded, typically somewhat higher priced products will be exchanged with lower priced private label products. But to the resilience of our industry, it's maybe a choice between various types of milk, but essentially, of course, we all need to eat and drink even during recession time. So as such, we cannot see any decrease in consumption, but maybe changes in consumption pattern. Clearly, what you would expect in periods like this is also that home consumption will increase. Typically, that is what happens, and that will normally also mean higher family consumption, and products that cater in that market will normally see some level of growth.
Okay, and from Håkon Fuglu in SEB, how will the filling equipment deliveries be distributed over the next year?
How will the filling equipment
deliveries?
It's the timing.
It's the time. Well, it's a little bit difficult question to answer. What we are doing right now, and this is actually quite for this industry new compared to earlier years, is that because there's been delivery issues on capital equipment, filling equipment, we are now seeing that contracts are made with a very, very long lead time, much longer than we had before. And to Ben's point, in Americas, we have made them contracts which are made for installation in next year and even the year beyond that, so in 2024. Similarly, we're seeing that in Europe. So the distribution, I think, will be very reasonably even during next year. We have a backlog for that, and again, longer lead times in the contracts than what we have experienced before.
Thank you. Last chance from the audience in Oslo. Any questions? No. I do not see any more questions on the webcast either, so that concludes our session for today. Thank you very much for your attention, and have a nice day.
Thank you very much.